Now, the shotgun start in golf is full of mathematics. There's a lot of setup work that we have to do in order to make a tournament work. So I'm going to demonstrate to you just exactly how we do a shotgun start here.
And here we go.
All right, all right, all right. Gentlemen, start your engine!
Greetings and welcome to a Friday edition of the Shotgun Start. It is April 30th. Andy, how are we doing?
Brendan, I didn't expect to be saying this, but it's Victory Friday.
Fantastic. I'm so happy for you. I think, like, regardless of what happened in the draft, started out with a little turmoil up north, team turmoil up north in Green Bay, just a complete mess. Who knows if they'll ever recover? And it was already a good day. Then you make waves. I mean, we are, full disclosure, we're recording within 10 minutes after the Bears have just traded up to pick number, was it 11 that they landed at?
11.
With the Giants. And they selected Justin Fields, the quarterback of Ohio State. How are you feeling? You signed on and you were screaming, throwing your hands in the air. What's your reaction?
I'm elated. I can. It's hard to even put into words. I was in the gutter as a football fan. The Andy Dalton, Nick Foles quarterback poo-poo platter that we had trotting out there. You know, an aging defense, a shoddy offensive line. It really didn't give much hope. And now we have hope. I'm dreaming already of actually having a real quarterback, whether he turns out great or not. You know, most haven't turned out good for the Bears. No, our franchise is littered with disasters. Mitchell Trubisky didn't work out, but we have hope again. And hope is like all that you can ask for. At the quarterback position, I'm just so elated. This guy, he's a stud. He's awesome. He's going to have a little chip on his shoulder for dropping to 11.
Yeah. I think he seemed pissed when they showed him on TV. He seemed like, you know, he's ready to rock.
I think we're going to have like a little situation similar to Mitch. Like, you had Trey Lance and Zach Wilson go ahead of him, and those guys, like, it's like Mitch didn't play the games that Watson played. You know, it's a very similar, eerily similar situation where these NFL teams maybe talk themselves into these guys. Like, Trey Lance didn't even play last year. If Justin Fields doesn't play, he goes number two, probably.
Yeah.
He plays, and he had one of the best games of any quarterback in college football history in that season that he played. I'm through the moon. I can't. I'm
through the moon.
I'm just so happy.
Through the roof and the moon.
This day for my football fandom has really been all I could ask for.
I'm happy for you. I know. I was prepared. We were about to hit record. Bears. What were the Bears originally drafting at?
Like 20
or something like that. Okay. So like we weren't gonna wait for that long. And I was gonna record. I was coming in with this take like, the draft, like, really is like the sporting event where you could spend a minute reading the list of the names the next day, right? Instead of investing. But like, this is why we love it. You would not get what the elation, was there terror at any point where you thought maybe they're training up for Mac Jones?
Utter terror.
Like, that's such a roller coaster.
Terror. And I, you know, who knows? I don't know anything about scouting quarterbacks. Mac Jones might turn out to be better than Justin Fields. But I didn't want him. That would have been like the conventional Bears thing to do, was to take the proven pocket passer, which we already have two of, who are arguably proven.
Yep.
But no more QB1. Yeah, yeah. QB1's, he's got to be pissed off. But can we trade one of our quarterbacks now? We got three of them. Like, what can we do? Can we wheel and deal? Can we get like a seventh round pick for Dalton now?
I saw someone suggest, they're showing this kid from this tackle from Northwestern just got picked. And I think in his family box, I see Matt Fitzpatrick hiding there in the background. They've got his agents, his family. There's Fitzy. Fitzgerald is there. And I think I see Matt Fitzpatrick sneaking around in that family box.
You know, it's important. The Chicago, the Chargers are now Chicago's team because they drafted this tackle.
I apologize to our audience in England, Australia, New Zealand. We got a full scouting report. Jordy Loof sent us a scouting report of the New Zealand PGA with analogies to the Ryan Fox as their Omari Resti. But we got to talk about the draft. Like, this is such a hopeful day for you. And I saw one tweet. I think maybe Will Brinson, CBS, somebody, I may be misattributing that, said if the Packers trade Aaron Rodgers, the Bears might have the best quarterback tomorrow in the division. That's a remarkable, sudden change of events.
To go from thinking that we had Dalton and Foles for the foreseeable future to having Justin Fields. And I mean, the thing is, we didn't have to trade to like 5 to get him or 6. Like, we didn't have to trade up that much to get him. Yeah. I mean, now you could look at Ryan Pace or fine or shitty GM, really, not fine.
That's what I'm wondering about. Are you concerned? Yeah,
well,
with
he's traded up for a lot of players. The best is he traded up, you know, beyond Trubisky, trading up for Trubisky. He traded up for Leonard Floyd and then let him walk. Like, how do you do that? How is that possible? How can you trade up for a player and then, like, after 3 years, just give up on him? Like, that, and then he had, like, almost a Pro Bowl season the next year. It's unbelievable. Like, that's maybe one of the worst indictments of a GM of all time, is that. Trading up for a player and then not re-signing him.
I'm so happy for you. I'm happy for you. Like, hey, primo talent, whether it works, whether he's wrecked or ruined, like today is a success for you, and that's what matters. And like every other, like every good Big Ten, every kid that goes to school for the Big Ten, they're going to Chicago for their first job after college. So everybody just kind of migrates, filters into Chicago, and that's where Justin Fields, I mean, absolute stud, like you said. I couldn't be happier.
Reaction from a friend of the program, fellow Bears fan, Jay Rigdon, just messaged me, said, I didn't think this was possible. I've never been excited about a Bears first round pick, except maybe David Terrell, which didn't end well. But
didn't go well.
But hey, there's hope. There's hope in the streets of Chicago. I'm thinking about going for a run after this. I'm just so elated. I honestly thought this was a lost fall. I thought it was like I already had written off. I didn't even want to watch the team.
Andy Dalton.
I would was thinking about protesting the season, and now they got me back. They always get me back.
As a football fan, I'm happy to. Just a major market, old school team with history getting, you know, a bona fide star, whether he's it on the field, like, you know, Justin Fields is a marketable, massive talent. So that'll be great. Anything else you want to add? I mean, just a quickly developing 15 minutes here before we hit record.
What's the over-under? My phone is just blowing up with messages and, you know, from just Bears fans. It's just unbelievable. It's just an unbelievable
9 wins.
Thing.
What are we saying? 10 wins. What are we?
I'm not putting any predictions on that. Who knows if he's going to be day one starter? I'm just so happy that we have hope in the room, in the QB room. We don't have the Red Rocket as our only QB. Red Rocket and Foles with a shoddy offensive line. We're back.
We're back. My assumption is with Pace and Nagy's jobs not the most secure that Fields' ass will be out there within the first month as soon as things start to go.
They better just
with the Red
draft Rock. Some offensive line talent. They need. They need so much. That's the problem. The cupboard's really bare.
All right. 10 minutes. We could go for an hour. I'm so happy for you. It's the story, I think. It's the story of the first round. If you're just looking at unbiased, nonpartisan, I guess you could go 1, 2, 3 of the quarterbacks. But this is the biggest
Devonta
move.
Fields
landing in a major market.
Falling to 10, too, for the Eagles.
Yeah.
Big pickup for the Eagles too. All right, let's move on. Yeah. We got the exciting snake championship down in Tampa,
where Keegan Bradley leads.
Your guy.
He
went
out
guy.
Post my guy. Why is it my guy?
Because,
what are you talking about?
Because he's you're gonna become it's a Ryder Cup year. You know, I think it's time to start considering Keegan.
Keegan's a real swamp creature himself. You know, he claims Boston, but he's as dupe as they come. He shot a 64, leads a bunch of guys at 5-under, including Patton Gazire or Hudson Swafford, that nobody can tell. Max Homa, Hank Lebioda, Ryan Moore, and Emiliano Grillo, who are all 5-under. A lot of low scores. But, I mean, this is kind of what you expect. This is kind of leader you expect. Keegan Bradley just, you know, for as irksome as he is, it's kind of goofy. You know, he seems to rub a lot of people the wrong way. Guy is an absolute stud, tee to green, right? I mean, and that can play at Valspar. He just loses. I think I saw some quote today. He's like, if I can just be a zero strokes gain putting, like, I'm happy. But I think, again, obviously it's been a disaster since the anchoring ban. And this year he's, you know, 185th to 200th in strokes gain putting again. But he's so, so good tee to green. That he makes up, you know, keeps him competitive on tour, and that's where you get a 64 when he can putt a little bit.
Yeah, this is a place you got to hit the ball well, and obviously he has done that for a long time. One of the things I'm watching for on this leaderboard is Sam Burns. Sam Burns on there. You know, is it possible that spending a week under the town crier's wing could really have helped him out and launch his career into a new stratosphere?
I don't see that benefit. Do you? What do you? What's this theory? What are you even proposing here? I think he's probably unburdened by the motor mouth, and that's why you're going to see him. He doesn't have to deal with that kind
I'm
of stuff.
I'm just saying what Pottavedra's going to say if Sam Burns somehow pulls this out.
Paul Casey going for 3 in a row is 3-under. I got. Look, I'm throttling down on my Paul Casey. It's unfounded. That's fine if you want to say that. It's. Whatever. TPJ, the wizard. I heard Whit Watson make several references to wizardry, as he's going to need some wizardry out of this lie, and the wizard with a, you know, great up and down. So TPJ just shows up 4-under, gets that exemption, 67. Guy could just be no show for 3 years and then just beat the best in the world. He's gonna be in the pancake zone sooner or later with the way he operates. He's winner nothing.
Maybe the greatest Hooters tour player of all time, Todd Potter Jr.
I think he is, without a doubt. Anything other reaction to Tampa?
Well, you got Chase Koepka's in the mix, the younger brother. Chase.
He's played well now. He's done all right. He's posted some numbers. I think at Honda he posted a number. He's done okay for himself. I don't have much else. It was Valspar.
Were you surprised that Michael Visacki didn't play great?
No. I mean, that has really taken on a life of its own.
It's pretty unbelievable.
It's just fine. It's a good
story. It's a great story.
But the camera was there. They caught him crying, and I guess people needed catnip for the week, because it's a great story. I'm shocked at how far and wide it has spread, which is good. I'm glad he's.
I mean, the
it.
Tour turned into a Visacki tracker this morning.
Well, they see it like moth to a flame.
It was on SportsCenter. Anything that gets on SportsCenter, you know that the tour is going to then in turn get some mileage out of.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great story. He's getting his PIP numbers. He's going to be way up there in the PIP.
Speaking
of, to be a member, our reigning
thirst bucket of the week is really, really trying his best to win back-to-back weeks. He's trying to become the first ever back-to-back thirst bucket challenge winner of the week.
I mean, we got all sorts of suggestions that TJ's getting married for thirst bucket points, you know, finally tying the knot because of all the content around. I mean, it is true. Like, the wedding meltwater will make the wedding pay for itself, you know, kind of you can do whatever you want. But yeah, JT's got this Twitter handle on his caddy bib. But this comes after he was all high and mighty about it, right? He's like, I don't care about any of this stuff. I'm here to win tournaments. Or I mean, I play to win, not for popularity. When I don't think that's, I think popularity matters to him, right? I think as much as he's got, I think it matters to Brooksy quite a bit.
I think it matters to all of them. All the, if you're like a top 10 player in the world, you're very likely an extreme narcissist. That's what it takes. Kind of narcissism is almost like a skill that professional golfers have. Like it's such a, you know, golf is such a, like a, you have to be so driven in everything and work so hard. And it's such a lonely, self-serving pursuit that I think this Pip is like, it's actually kind of a brilliant ploy by the tour. Is like you know, you got these guys that were like, well, social media doesn't pay the bills. And it's like, well, if you're popular, we're going to pay you. And they all are in turn going to try and be popular.
Yep. Patriots just took Mac Jones.
Man. Sorry, Patriots fans. You know.
Why are we down on Mac Jones? I mean,
there's no reason to be. I think it's just not as exciting.
Well, yeah. Yeah. But hey, going to a fun situation, I'm sure.
The question is, what quarterback wouldn't be successful at Alabama?
That's true. But I guess his wideouts were saying Smith and Waddle said he's better than Tua. Is that it? Or they whispered about it? I don't know.
Is Tua good? So. That's still a question.
That's up for debate. While we're on the subject of Pip, Ryan Lavner, excellent article at golfchannel.com on the title with the Player Impact Program highlighting visibility. Who has appeared most on PGA Tour Live this year? Well, as listeners of this podcast will know, for he spent 4 years bringing you featured groups, bringing you fan vote Friday scandals, ballots that have been rigged in favor of certain, you know, motocross, Red Bull enthusiasts, Kygo enthusiasts, whatever you name it. The findings should come as no surprise, but I love to see the actual, some of the pen to paper groundwork, work done here by Ryan Lavner. This is for just this year. So those who have appeared the most overall on PGA Tour Live, 12 appearances, Rory McIlroy and Ricky Fowler. Ricky hasn't even played
that. He's 115th in the world. We still haven't talked about his PGA exception.
Oh yeah, we'll get to that. That's in news. John Rahm, John Rahm has 11. Phil 10. Phil, another one that's sort of, I mean, I get it. He's the tour has stood on his shoulders, right?
Yes.
For 2 decades, amongst others, not solely, but you know, he's one of a pillar. Spieth, DJ, I don't know, but a lot of guys you're used to. Reed is out there. Francesco Molinari is kind of a random one. Max Homa is fifth.
That's crazy. Congrats to Max.
Why?
Max, though.
Yeah. I mean, he's popular.
He plays a lot, too.
I don't know.
That's an important other thing.
Yeah.
If you play a lot, you get more chances.
So those who have, now separate category, those have appeared most during early round coverage where the tour absolutely sets it and you're not kind of at the mercy of the tee sheet. Rory and Ricky and Rahm, 7 times. So like pretty much every time Ricky starts, he's on PGA Tour Live Thursday, Friday. Those have appeared during the weekend. So, you know, this is where you're at the mercy of the tee sheet and the leaderboard, or, you know, early tee times. Rory and Ricky, 5 appearances. Again, they lead every subcategory. It's kind of unbelievable. So good study by Ryan Lavner. Should we go into another study from a listener submitted study while we're on the subject of Pip? And how they, so what was your take about NBA, the top of the PGA Tour, just to refresh it before
we get into
this?
I owe an apology. I messed up the minimum salary in the NBA by quite a bit. But the take.
Yeah, I was going to say, didn't you say it was like 500
yeah,
grand?
Yeah, it's
like
1.2 million. But
1.2. Yeah.
But that doesn't really matter. The point was, like, if you're the highest paid athlete in a sport, like, think about baseball, think about the NBA, think about the NFL. These guys get paid so much more than the bottom performers in their sport, like the minimum salary guys. In golf, it's ridiculous. It's like you have a great year, you make $10 million. So you could be a superstar, have an awesome year, make $10 million, and Pepe Peter Malnati is making 1.5 right on your ass. It's like, that doesn't make any sense. Nobody even knows who Pepe Peter Malnati is. Kelly Kraft could walk through a crowded mall and not get noticed by anybody. You know, it depends
on the mall. Maybe he's in Dallas. You know, they might have people hounding him for autographs, like the Beatles walking through. You never know. SMU, amateur champ.
So the point was that the top performers, the guys that really that carry the water for the tour, that get these big, massive TV contracts, that get these massive sponsorship people, you know, getting travelers dumping tons of money into the tour, and Charles Schwab, the Tigers, the Brookses, the Justin Thomases, right, the Jordan Spieths, the Rorys, right, they're all extraordinarily underpaid under the current system, because if anything, they're way more relevant than the star running back of the NFL is compared to the, you know, quarterback or the D lineman, you know, that is like a rotation D lineman. Because like without the faces, yep, of the PGA Tour, which is a very marketable sport because they wear a hat and their face is not covered up, like, you know, it is, and it's an individual sport, are extremely underpaid. So anyways, Josh Borisiak,
yep,
I think I pronounced it right.
He did all the work. He did the work. He actually created a method. We'll read kind of the abstract tonight, then get into some of the cross tabs and the Excel sheet comparing NBA and PGA Tour salaries. Should we talk? Here's his method: 2021 NBA salaries to PGA Tour winnings from the last full season, which is 19. He used the top 125 from the tour. He looked at the share of total for each set of data. So Curry's $43 million was roughly 1.1%. of, you know, almost $4 billion of total NBA salaries. There are four times the number of NBA players, so the top PGA Tour player was compared to the salary share of the top four players from the NBA. The number two PGA player was compared to the next four from the NBA.
Very official study here.
Very official. Very official. Findings. The initial findings from Josh Borisiak. Out of roughly $281 million paid to the top 125 in 2019, the top 20 players were underpaid. So this is your rainmakers. Top 20 were underpaid by a staggering $47.8 million, or almost 32, or more than 32%. That gets at you're just giddy. You're happy. This is supporting your notion that, you know, it's. They're underpaid relative to other sports.
A rare moment where Data Boy is coming out to support one of my arguments. It's just,
so we're top 10 now. We're narrowing it even further to those more elite rainmakers from top 20. Top 10 was underpaid by $31.2 million or 34% relative to the NBA's creme de la creme. Everyone in the top 34 was theoretically underpaid, with the remaining 91 players overpaid.
We're looking at you.
So that's the
Kelly Kraft and Tyler Duncan.
That is your kind of line of demarcation. 34. So if you make it, I don't know if that means you're in Atlanta, you're underpaid, whatever, however he defines it, total winnings. So 34. The players making the bottom 25. So I don't know what you want to call this. The Cameron Zones, a lot, you know, whatever. The bottom 25, so 100 to 125, were overpaid by 77%. So these are the guys just living off the others.
77%.
These are the Bernie bros. They are just living off the fat of the land. They overpaid 77%. The bottom five, which is the equivalent to the entry-level minimum in the NBA, this can't be right, should only be paid $63,000 per year. So the bottom five, equivalent to the entry-level minimum in the NBA, should only be paid $63,000 a year.
You know who is in that bottom five? Sabo.
Who?
Oh, God. How amazing would it be if somebody went to Sabo and took away all of his earnings, turned it into $63,000. Watch his reaction.
He can make more than that doing appearances in Slovakia. He can make more than that just doing appearances. Outside of the bottom feeders, the players benefiting the most fall in the 80 to 89 range. So the Brian Stewarts and Michael Thompsons of the world. So that 80 to 90 outside of the very bottom really benefit the most. They're making whatever, a couple million a year when they shouldn't be near that.
So then the,
long story short from Josh, long story short, Andy is right, which I'm sure you'd love to hear.
This is the thing that people will then say. They'll say, oh, well, you know, those guys get paid more off the course. Guess what? The star athletes of other sports, you know what? They get paid more. They get paid more off the course than the backup D tackle. Like, you know,
right.
Justin Fields, having done right. nothing on the football field, is going to get paid more than, you know, our, you know, let's see. Who's a good comparison? Who's our safety? I don't know. Our safety.
Who's your kicker? Yeah.
Yeah. Eddie Pinheiro, no more.
Do you have a kicker?
We've got Carlos Santos, Cairo Santa. But the point, so people are going to say that, but it's not the point. They shouldn't have to recoup their shortcomings off the course. Like, that's yeah. ridiculous. This system is ridiculous. There's like I don't want people to take this the wrong way, but there's literally a ceiling on the top players in the world, how much they can earn. That's yeah. actually why the PGL makes a lot of sense.
I found that interesting because I was doing a post for Instagram, and I was looking at old Valspars. I found VJ won the Valspar in 04, became the first ever 10 million in a season player. He won 9 times that year and was number one. That was his crazy 04 year. And that was when Valspar was in October. But I figured it had to have happened a bunch, right? Since then, it's only happened. Tiger did it 3 times, hit 10 million in a season. And then Spieth got 12 million. This is, of course, no FedEx bonus money. So, I mean, you bake that in, that makes an impact, but only really at the first 5 to 10 guys. Those start to become really substantial sums in the seven figures, but it hasn't happened since Spieth either. So it's 12 million, I guess that would have been 15. So it doesn't happen that much where the very elite guys, even the guys who are winning on the course, not just popular, the guys winning a lot on the course, you're not, you know.
Yeah, this isn't popularity, this is performance. This is strictly performance.
Yep. So, all right, thanks to Josh for sending in that supporting evidence. Andy's very happy that his inclination, his theory was right. All right, should we move on? Other events that are happening, do we care about, you know, the most needless updates, one-round updates?
The middle of the LPGA round, MP Park's leading. She's two holes Singapore. Into her second round.
You don't need to know anything about that.
Lydia Ko's in the mix after an off. You know, she had a bad week at Wilshire, but that's understandable after a really emotional win in Hawaii.
You see who's co-leading at Huntsville on the Korn Ferry Tour?
I didn't.
Carl Yon and Nick Hardy, 6-under, 64 co-leaders. There's an 18-hole update.
Let me tell you something. Think about Nick. How good Nick's going to play tomorrow now that he knows the Bears got Justin Fields.
That's true. We have a game within the game, though. Nipping his heels right behind him, one shot back, is David Lipsky. So you could have a real battle
Big Ten battle.
Chicago's Big Ten team. You got Hardy versus Lipsky down there in Huntsville. Keep an eye on that one. I don't know. LPGA is in the middle of it. European Tour, Tenerife Open, the Piss Bear. Open with a 9-under. That the course, as we noted, we went into great detail on Wednesday preview. Just absolute pitch and putt, beautiful, scenic. But I mean, they're going to carve it up. A bunch of records were set there when they played it, you know, 17 years ago, and now they're back with even more optimized equipment and swings and all that stuff. So yeah, 9-under. But you know, a million guys are 8-under, 7-under. If you weren't shooting in the mid to low 60s, you're not. You know, sniffing the top.
Adjusted par is about 66 out there.
Yeah, absolutely. Was anyone over par? Oh, yeah. Yeah. Tyler Koivisto, Antoine Rosner. What happened to Antoine?
Romain Langasque, too.
Langasque.
And MLV, MLV shot 77. It was a tough day for the French. There's three French.
The French.
Do you think
Rosner?
They were out drinking wine or something?
Yeah.
Getting into the Bordeaux.
Living the island life. Living the island life. Of course. You know how MLV, once he gets a little taste, he's party boy. Other things, other results. Do you want to do anything about the club pro?
Omar
Uresti ran away with it. So we'll be following him at Kiowa. So we get a lot of texts about Omar. PGA pros, there's some code of ethics. They might not be allowed to kind of tee off on that. If you're a member of the PGA, you might not be able to go crazy hollering about it. Heard maybe the North Texas PGA where he's a member, they don't love him showing up for all the events. Might not let him in some events. I don't know. All sorts of rumors. But hey, Omar, from what we're told, is the nicest guy, but it is just kind of bogus. And to be fair, there were a handful of other guys who played on tour, not just for a cup of coffee, but played on tour for a few years, several years, that got exemptions through that top 20. The problem is the guy never made the PGA as a tour member, and now he's just raking it, mopping the floor and getting in all these major championships.
And he played on the PGA tour for 10 plus years.
Right.
This is not.
Right. 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 All right. Anything else? Club pro reaction. You know what I mean?
Congrats to all the guys that made it. Pretty cool to get a play, obviously, in a major. And for some of these guys, it'll probably be the only time they play in the major. But, you know, Rob LeBritz, in again.
Always. Yeah. Your guy, Jeff Hart, I don't think made it.
Brad Merrick made it, though.
Okay.
T8.
Okay. We'll do a big, we'll probably do a segment on these guys come PGA week. When we're down in Kiowa. Maybe we'll do a little segment on
Marty Jurson, one shot short. Hate to see it.
Oh, he did. The pain rap, right?
Yeah.
Pain guy?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we'll talk more about the PGA guys at Kiowa in a couple weeks. I mean, you are kind of screwed if you're a Northern pro, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you show up in April.
A little bit harder.
Play Bermuda and you're kind of, that's it. Quick, boom, boom, boom. All right, let's start a new segment. A new segment brought to you by the USGA, the US Women's Open. The segment, we'll call it Eye on Olympic. We need to do this more often. It's like a fan vote Friday, except maybe we'll give you an option to vote for a few players you want. A little pen light. So Eye on Olympic, we're going to spotlight a few players that are in the field, whether they're exempt, whether they qualified, just to give you a little nugget, give you an appetizer as we get fired up for Olympic. It's brought to you by the USGA, US Women's Open. Visit uswomensopen.com. I think that's a website where you could probably learn more about that championship. You could join the Victory Club to learn more about both opens. If you want,
you get advanced early access to stuff. You get discounts on stuff.
I got an email today about tickets going on sale for the U.S. Women's Open because I'm in the Victory Club. So I don't know if you're in the San Francisco area, maybe you're Northern California, join the Victory Club. Our first subject for Eye on Olympic segment will be Yuka Sasso. Now, I know you brought her up a couple weeks ago
in Hawaii,
because you were hollering about how sort of the restrictive Zalatoris type restrictions on her ability to continue to play on the LPGA. You're all worked up about that.
Yeah, I mean, it stinks. She's like one of the young phenoms in the sport. Obviously, at the U.S. Women's Open, she's in the field because she's a young phenom in the sport and deserving of it. It's not a member-run organization trying to hold the most talented players in the world down.
Yeah, she finished 13th in her major championship debut with champions in Houston last U.S. Women's Open. Obviously, that was very late in the year in December. Let's get into a little bit about Yuka, why you should like her, why you should follow her, why you might be intrigued to follow her at the Women's Open at Olympic. So there's not much Filipino. She's half Japanese, half Filipina. There's very little Filipino golf history. I looked at the history, both women's side, men's side. Miguel Tabuna might be
Tabuna.
A name you're familiar with. I remember
Tabuna.
Following Miggy, yeah, quite a bit, but there's not much. So here's an article from Ken Brown on Olympics website. And how'd she get into golf? It's just so limited in the Philippines. Golf was all I had, she said. I was born in the Philippines. I grew up there. But we moved to Japan when I was 4 or 5, and she couldn't speak Japanese. So she didn't have any friends. Her dad is a Japanese businessman. Her mom is Filipina. So she moved to Japan at 4 or 5. She couldn't speak Japanese, had no friends. So her dad brought her the driving range and the golf course, and that's the only thing I had. She became like singularly focused on just pounding balls at the range because she didn't speak the local language, and that's how she got into golf. And obviously, probably may not have gotten into golf had she stayed in the Philippines, where it's just, it's not as popular. There's less access. You're just not as exposed to it as much. So the big one, which you'll hear about, you know, in addition to that range time, but she worked constantly on her swing by watching videos of Rory McIlroy. This was, I think you made tongue-in-cheek reference to this. Is that right? Is that accurate to say? They mentioned it at Champions at the U.S. Women's Open nonstop. When I was nine, she said, I want to be like Rory.
Catnip for the aggregators and the quote tweeters.
So she moved back to the Philippines at 9 to be homeschooled and play golf every day. I mean, she goes to the range morning. This is like in her early teens. Works out, you know, does some homeschool, and then she's like at the golf course till 6-7 o'clock every day. She committed to UGA, Georgia, but never went. She turned pro instead of attending college, and because she got her card.
Do you think in Athens they're treating her like Fitzy is treated at Northwestern?
No, they might treat her like
Joaquin
Neiman. Who's the commitment
Joaquin Neiman
to Georgia
South
that failed? No, they might be mad. She turned pro instead of coming. Who's someone who committed to UGA and then turned their back on him? I'll have to think of somebody else. So the big thing, her entire breakout, and this is pretty cool as we look towards the Olympics in August and try to understand like what she means for the Philippines, was she got gold at the 2018 Asian Games. She became known as one of the Philippines Asian Games Golden Girls, alongside a weightlifter, Hilden Diaz, a skateboarder, which I wanted to learn more about in the Asian Games, and her golf teammate, Bianca Pagdananan and Lois K. Go.
Bianca played golf in college somewhere, like Duke or something?
Arizona.
Okay, Arizona. I remember that.
Yeah. So this was the big thing. They're teammates of this 2018 Asian Games. And Yuka wins solo gold with a 66 in the final round. Bianca shoots 66, could go from 13th to bronze. And they win team gold, and they win solo gold. And you may think, like, Asian Games, what is this? Some, like, sub-category of athletic competition? Like, massive, massive deal. They're instantly, like, overnight national heroes.
They beat South Korea.
They beat South Korea. So here's how she won solo gold. She double bogeyed the 17th hole, and she's 2 behind Li Wenbo of China, going to 18. Par 5 is 18. She makes an eagle on 18, and Li Wenbo hit in the water and made a quad. A fat 9, as I read an article, on the last hole of the Asian Games. She's 2 up. So Yuka wins comfortably by 3. Went from 2 down to win by 3 solo. And Bianca, you know, shoots her own 66. They win the team gold. Massive, massive deal. She talks about like how she went back. She was like not totally ready for it. She got back to the Philippines. They're just like I said, the Asian Games golden girl. She's on all these TV networks, on the front page of every paper, even today. Like every single round of hers, I was looking for research, like every single round of hers gets a write up in like every paper, multiple papers. It just could be a regular season event, could be
written
whatever.
Written by a real writer, not like the PGA Tour bot, right?
Right. Right. So, yeah. What else has she done? That one's the big one. It makes her like this national hero. And obviously, when we talk about the Olympics, like that's sort of the impact we're talking about, right? This is an Asian Games thing, and she won, you know, Philippines Athlete of the Year. They talk about how they're really down because Manny Pacquiao is not boxing anymore. He's like their national sporting icon. And now it's kind of Yuka, maybe a little bit of Bianca, but she won the 2020 Athlete of the Year given by some Sports Writers Association. She's won it twice in 3 years. Like, she is a national hero. Whether she's done anything on the LPGA yet or will do anything at Olympics, she's already a national hero. The big thing, you know, obviously she hits, allegedly, like, has a similar swing to Rory from watching it. She's a powerful player. People kind of drool over that. What else? She won the 2019 Girls Junior PGA. That was in Connecticut. She was the medalist at the U.S. Girls, USGA, U.S. Girls Junior. She lost in the quarters or the semis of the match play. What else? Should we do a little personal? She kind of popped this, that BTS, like the really massive K-pop band. She goes, they're fine, but they're not my favorite. She likes Sam Smith, Twice, Blackpink, all these bands that are totally unfamiliar to me as a middle-aged man in America. What else do we... So she goes, she wasn't expecting that to be so big, but the Asian gold just changed everything. It was hard for me to let it sink in. It took like several weeks for her to become sort of this overnight national celebrity. What else do we got here? Oh, fun one. I want to get pitch you about. So she went to the Olympic Youth Games. Again, all these national team competitions are where, you know, the most important thing to her, right? Or as representing the Philippines. In Buenos Aires, she said she struggled because it was like windy and there weren't trees, and it was Lynx-ish, obviously, but it was like firm and fast and windy. And she's like, in the Philippines and a lot of the Japan tour and in America, like, I just hit the ball really high and I don't have to play the ground and I'm not used to the wind. And she's like struggled a bit at this Youth Olympic Games in Buenos Aires. And I would imagine Olympic would not necessarily present that kind of challenge, right? It's not Lynx-ish. Could it be windy, I suppose? Mm-hmm. But, I mean, if you're a highball hitter, windy, it's not going to...
Yeah, she'll do well there. I mean, distance is going to be a reward. And, I mean, people that find fairways, obviously, with how narrow it is. But...
Yeah. Yep. So, yeah, I just think, like, you know, because she's a highball hitter, it doesn't preclude her. Obviously, she turned pro in the Japan LPGA. She won two of her first three events. That's against, like, a pretty competitive tour. Players who were much older, seasoned veterans on that JLPGA, and she won two of her first three events. What else we got here? Just, yeah, one Philippine Athlete of the Year, 2020. So that's coming off of that. Awarded that in March. And again, just an awesome story. I think someone to follow is like this national hero you don't know much about. Obviously, she made her big splash here by she co-led at Champions in Houston for, I mean, I think, two
she's
rounds.
She's second and at the Lotte Championship in Hawaii going into the final round and finished top 10 there.
Yeah.
So, like, she's – or the Lotte, not the Lotte.
Lotte. I read some few things about – I mean, obviously she played with Lydia Ko there, and that was kind of a massive influence she took away from that. But not finding – you know, trying to get starts where she can. She played all right at the A&A as well.
Too. All right.
So
that's
a stud. 19-year-old Yuka Sasso to watch. She's already done well at a U.S. Women's Open, and now she's back.
I know more about her now than I did before. It'll be good leading into the U.S. Women's Open, biggest major of the year for them. So,
if you have candidates you want us to dig for, interesting, fun, wild stories, send us some. We'll do a few more of these heading into Olympic. All right, let's do news real quick, and then we'll get to flashback.
Ricky Tour Alive.
I mean, it's not the tour.
Unbelievable.
He gets an exemption. It's a PGA.
How about John Catlin? How about they crowbarred him in there?
This Catlin shield. They're throwing him out there as a human shield. Because it's like, it's not just Ricky. It's Catlin. Catlin's won three times. He's winning on the tour that he's a member. There he plays.
Excelling.
I mean, the Ricky thing. They don't have a good answer. They don't have a justification. They're just if you're a Ryder Cup player and in the last Ryder Cup, which is ages ago now.
3 years. Ages, 3 years
2018.
Ago.
If you're a Ryder Cup player, you also have to be in the top 100. He's not in the top 100. Now, it's not the worst thing. He's not 500th in the world. He hasn't tumbled. He's not, you know, just completely fallen off the map. But like, I mean, it's the Adam Scott quote all over again. Are you a major or do you just want to be entertainment? You want to bring in I mean, Puma, I'm sure, is already activating some South Carolina brand wear that they're going to sell. I just like, I mean, are they going to have a, you know, woman in a bikini changing the scores at the 1987 PGA at PGA National? Like, what is this? Is this a sideshow? This is, it just doesn't feel like it's anti-competitive. It's if you're 109th in the world and they're giving you, you don't get in, and they say Ricky's in because of this dubious or nebulous accomplishments and, you know, world golf ranking, but you have a higher ranking, I think you'd be pretty pissed. I just, and it's not even Ricky's fault. Ricky's under the microscope because he's on TV so much and all the commercials. Like, they give him a spot, there's going to be backlash, but it's not, it's nothing he's done himself, right? I mean, he's not, you know, awarding it himself, but it's well, just kind of bogus for a major championship.
Here's like Maverick McNealy, 101st in the world. He's got a second and a fourth in his last six starts. Like, one guy's been competitive. One guy's had chances to win tournaments. One guy's playing at a high level. The other guy isn't even playing. That's what I think that I have, like, the biggest issue with is, like, it'd be one thing if Ricky had been grinding and playing, like, every week because he's like, hey, like, I really want to get into this PGA. He's just choosing not to participate. Like, he played the Valero. He obviously missed out on the Masters because he did not qualify. And, like, since then, he just hasn't played.
Sold some Kate Spade purses for Mother's Day. Did that. He's not trying the opposite field events when he's not qualifying for WGCs. It doesn't seem necessary. Like, PGA walked themselves into this, too. Like, just, blowback for it. I don't get it. Like, do you want to be a major or not? You know, it just seems anti-competitive.
It's like, then you got, like, you got Matthias Schwab, who's played a really good year on the European Tour. You know, it's just like, there are good players that are ahead of him in the rankings. And, you know, by the time the PGA rolls around, Ricky might be 120th in the world rankings. It's not getting better. He's going down again this week.
He's not playing. Yeah. They should pair him with Omar. You know, the two kind of guys that are there on dubious circumstances.
I don't know. It stinks. It's like, this is the whole meritocracy thing. Like, golf loves to hang its hat. Like, you get in when you're qualified, and but this is a perfect example.
And majors are supposed to be the ultimate test of that, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, of course, you have past champions who earned it.
And, like, you get, like, Phil might, you know, I saw Phil's weighing whether he'd take a special exemption to the U.S. Open. Ricky's not Phil. You know?
That's where I'm going to go. I was going there next. Like, that's...
And then Phil saying he might not even take it. Like,
yeah.
I don't know.
The venue doesn't matter. I just don't know yet. I don't know to answer that question. He's still signed up to play, a sectional after the Memorial. Again, Phil is like...
I wonder if Ricky's signed up to play a sectional.
It's a good question. Is there some exemption? He can't possibly have some exemption.
No.
I doubt it. Did some USGA sort of clinic somewhere, so he gets in, but I don't know. I don't think he's exempt. But anyways, yeah. But
my guess is USGA wouldn't give him one. Like, it doesn't, that seems a little bit outside their wheelhouse.
No, they wouldn't do that. Phil is also like, I mean, he's top 10 player of all time.
Oh,
or around it.
Top 25, maybe.
I'm kidding. I just wanted to see if you're paying attention there. No, he's on the edge of somebody's like top 15.
Yeah,
around
one of the greatest players of the generation.
He's won majors. He is, he's a part of the USGA's history, whether he won it or not at this point. You know, he's a five-time runner-up. And this is what they do. They give Arnold Palmer an exemption for his last one at Oakmont. Like, a Jack gets some Ernie L's. Like, yeah, Ricky's not.
Listen, we don't even know if Mark Leishman or Ricky's better. They're in the same spot.
You doing drive-bys of Leishman
again?
I'm
not doing drive-bys of Leishman. I'm asking the question, who's a better player, him or Ricky? They're about the same age. They got the same amount of wins.
Interesting. Ricky's got a player, so people would probably say that. I don't know. All right. Anyways, that's enough exemption talk. Do you have any other news you want to hit on?
I got nothing else.
Hey, can I just real quick, we're on the Valspar week. great little nugget. Not vetted wholly, but Sean O'Hare, former winner of the Valspar. When you did your little flashback before we get, this is a good segue into flashback. On the second round of the PGA, I was brutal at Kiowa. Someone told us that O'Hare was like, he was in the mid 80s or something, way up there, maybe pushing 90, I don't know. And somebody, they're like on the 17th tee, somebody says to O'Hare, former Valspar winner, like, you know, what? I wonder what we're going to post. He goes, oh, are you kidding me? There's no way I'm posting this score. And he like goes to take the practice swing and like fakes a wrist injury, like drops his club and WDs. Now, I need to confirm that he WD'd. I didn't even look that up, but this was a funny story that they said. Sean O'Hare is like, no way I'm posting this score. Is that a vanity thing that these
that
guys do
like
if
the
they're
old,
getting blown out to sea?
The old Al Serzavec, you know, from Caddyshack.
Al Sir.
Ah, oh, my wrist.
So apparently he just, yeah, like 17th tee, like takes a practice one and throws his club to the ground. Anyways, that was a good O'Hare tidbit.
I got a little intel from a listener.
Okay, what do you got? What do you got?
This is deep intel. You know, you asked the question about what Louis was doing out at Golden Ocala.
Yeah, it was like a charity deal, right?
Yeah. Well,
he's into the ponies, or his wife's into the ponies, or something like that.
Louis just recently purchased a horse farm in Ocala.
No way.
And he's likely to make Golden Ocala the tribute course, his own course. He's looking for another place to buy tractors for, I think.
Can confirm Sean O'Hare was a WD from the 2012 PGA, along with Kevin Na and Scott Verplank. Kevin Na, we've seen him do that several times now. So Louis's going to buy tractors and just ride around Central Florida?
Yeah, he's living in horse country. The horse country that you broke down. Why it's so good for horses.
Yeah, it's got some special minerals.
He's going to be out in Ocala. We stopped in Ocala on our way back from Florida on the drive. That was like our first stop. Yeah. I almost went out and shot Golden Ocala just for the posterity's sake. With the drone, but allegedly also the GM has been made aware that of the bad drone footage.
Oh God. So Cal is the home to like John Travolta's airplane garage, airplane house, Louis Oosthuizen. What a weird collection of humans. That's amazing. And Ted Potter Jr. Fantastic. Let's get into
it. Did you know Golden Ocala is building? We talked about it. They're building another 9. More tribute holes on the way.
Are they?
Yeah. One of which will be the 4th at Oakmont.
Oh, really?
The church pews.
Is that church pews then down the left? Okay. All right.
So we're getting more tribute holes out there.
Maybe another Muirfield Village or Muirfield. Maybe more Muirfield Village tribute. You never know.
Well, they'd have to be careful. They have to be careful because Jack and his crew ripped it all up.
So, well, yeah, that changes.
Who knows what holes still are there? All right, Flashback Friday, Precision Pros
Shotgun Start,
Shotgun 20 for $20 off your rangefinder. You want to get in the game where you always know the right yardage, even you know at the steam or at the boomerang, you know.
I was going to say, we
allowed rangefinders, but the only rangefinders allowed to use the slope was the Precision Pro NX9 slope. So, you know, as rangefinders are allowed at fried egg events, but
oh my
the
God,
slope
this
function
is crooked.
Needs to be turned off unless you're using the Precision Pro NX9 slope. It's a steadfast rule. It is a article of competition,
it's a local rule for fried egg events.
It's gonna be enforced
slope off except for Precision
and
Pro.
Mostly it's because I don't know how to turn the slope off my Precision Pro NX9 slope. I haven't investigated it yet. I'm sure it's very easy. Everything is extremely user-friendly thing. I just haven't looked into how I turn the slope off yet.
Well, I'm sure you could call customer service.
I could call Eric.
I'll get back to you quickly. There you go. Shotgun 20, $20 off your precisionpro.com.
They're affordable. They're great. I had never seen this in action. I played with Tron and Big Randy. They rode. Will Knights and I walked at Olympic Club. I'd never seen this in action. You know, you talked about
the magnet.
I'd never seen it because I don't ride in carts usually. There's rarely do I ride in a cart. But if I had known that I'd ridden in a cart, you know, a few months ago, I didn't understand how the magnet worked. You literally just put it on there and it sticks.
What do you mean you didn't understand how the magnet worked? What are you talking about? I've
never
about?
Seen it you in action. It I read the thing on the paper and I don't know. It literally, you just put it on. They both put them on.
Yeah.
I took a picture. It was amazing.
There are pictures. Yeah. How are you just seeing this now? Yeah.
I'm not up on the times. I'm not an equipment buff. I got like six different brands of clubs in my bag, you know?
You do have a mix set. Do you have a six iron nowadays?
I've got a different six iron than the six and seven than my rest of my irons.
I know you were months without a six iron.
Well,
right?
the six, I lost the six, and then I went to a half set, and then the seven, the head fell off. The epoxy wore out. And it fell off. So then I couldn't go 5 to 8. It was too much. So I caved and asked a buddy to bring me a 6 and a 7. So now they're completely different shafts. My shafts and my regular irons keep the ball down. And these shafts are built to throw the ball up in the air high. So they come out of a completely different window. I was playing on a windy day in Florida. I hit a 6 iron from like 105 yards, and it ended up 40 yards short of the green. My caddy and I just burst out laughing.
Moonball. Well,
it was like two holes earlier. We were in the same wind, and I hit like one of my regular irons to like 2 feet because like I knew I judged the wind right and everything. And then two holes later, I hit the different iron, just float straight up into there. Yeah. Anyways, let's talk about Flashback Friday. We're doing the Valspar, but before it was the Valspar. Do you know what it was called originally?
Well, this was it had a just a revolving door of sponsors. It was the Transitions lenses.
Before Transitions,
Pods, the Pods Championship. Before Pods, the Tampa Bay Championship. It was the Chrysler, I believe, at one point. I think at least one other. I think Everbank. I think jumped in a year when I think Pods bailed 2 weeks before the tournament was. But yeah, it's been a revolving.
So this was the Tampa Bay Classic, presented by Buick.
Buick
was big in golf.
The sugar daddy of the PGA Tour,
sponsoring players
Buick's everywhere,
sponsoring tournaments all over the place. They had a great front man back then. Who was really into golf.
Tiger. That's right.
So anyways, this point, the Valspar, the Tampa Bay Classic presented by Buick at this point, is an opposite field event. So it was opposite the Amex, the WGC Amex.
WGC, and which was international.
It was played, year it was played in Mount Juliet, Ireland. And both of these events, it was in September, both of them were canceled in 2001 because of 9/11. So, interesting story. The week, you know, when they set the field for the WGC, KJ Choi had fallen out of the top 30 in the money list to 31. So he was the first guy out of the WGC Mount Juliet of like the, you know, money list exemption. How did Choi respond? How did the Choi boy, Mr. Hammer Drill, respond?
Is this the year he won?
He's
won it twice.
Yeah, he's won
it
twice. This is his first win. So Choi responds with a wire-to-wire win. He made mincemeat of the of Innisbrook. You know, everybody thought this was a really hard course. It was playing harder than the year before. He shot 3 shots better than John Houston. It was a full shot more difficult. He won by 7 over Glenn Allday. He opened the tournament with a course record 63, and it was the largest margin of victory on the PGA Tour in 2002. It was his second win of his career.
This wasn't Was this the one who was gaming the Sasquatch?
No,
a couple
no,
years
it was
after?
Later.
Was that was later Tampa win? Was they talked about
second.
It sounded like a tuna can on the end of a shaft. Okay,
the second
I think that
Tampa
was a
win.
Flashback or an Instagram post we did. Ernie was just aghast at the sound that the Sasquatch was making.
That's when it became right, so a full field event. This was you know, okay. Ernie's playing it. This was his opposite. Ernie was playing at Mount Juliet. You know, he's on his world tour.
Okay.
So, second win of his career and second of the season. He won his first win at the Compact Classic in New Orleans. The other players that Carlos won Mike. Multiple times in 2002, Tiger, Ernie, Phil, and Vijay, and KJ Choi.
Wow.
What a
group.
Yeah, unbelievable, right? So... His win was the second wire to wire win of the season. You know what the first one was?
No. What year are we talking?
2002.
Sorry. No. What was it?
It was a mere like 7 hours earlier. Tiger went wire to wire at the WGC at Mount Juliet.
Okay.
So it's pretty just two wire to wire wins. The same week.
Crazy.
Just an interesting fact on this event that it was in September in Florida, so you can imagine it was quite hot. So with temperatures topping 100 degrees, six caddies received intravenous treatment for dehydration. Paramedics were on site all weekend long. You know, who knows? This might Damon Green. Might have been one of those.
I was going to say, you beat me to it. I was like the Damon Green move, the IV. Give me it.
And speaking of medical attention, I found this on like some mental coach's website, so I'm not sure if this is true. But speaking of medical attention, Choi had been suffering from terrible stomach pains. Many saw him grabbing his abdomen during the final round. He later stated that the pain made him say to himself, I'll just take it hole by hole. He won the tournament by 7 shots and had his appendix removed the next day.
What? What?
Yeah.
The next day? He played with the burst appendix?
Something. Appendicitis or something he played with.
Holy cow.
Allegedly, according to this random mental coach's website.
Oh,
I didn't double check this.
All right.
So just a little on one of our Shotgun's favorite Choi boys. It probably deserves a little bit more treatment than this flashback, but we're going to get into a little bit of KJ Choi. Really, he was the first player from South Korea to play on the PGA Tour, earn full status. So this is from an SI article by Josh Elliott. Ordinarily, a player of Choi's caliber from a small golf-mad country like South Korea would be stalked ceaselessly.
Please tell me Josh Elliott worked in Glorious Madness into this article.
I don't think he did.
You know that's the same guy.
Really?
Chris Kirk bathed his young son and thought about what could be. This Glorious Madness, it's our Mother's Day gift to you. That's the same Josh Elliott. I can't wait to hear see some of this writing. Ceaselessly okay,
by the press. But while Choi is appreciated, he has not been the idol one would imagine, because when it comes to golf, South Koreans prefer the women. They were the ones, after all, who first fought success on foreign shores, led by Sae-ri Pak and others. South Koreans have been a growing force on the LPGA for a decade. By the time Choi arrived on the scene, becoming the first Korean to earn a PGA Tour card in 1999, the nationals' preferences had already been set. I didn't, you know, really know this.
Huh.
In fact, after a final round 69 pushed him into third place. So he's not really known, but in fact, after final round 69 pushed him into third place finish at the 04 Masters, Choi offered a wry smile when asked where his performance would appear in the next day's newspapers in South Korea. He replied, "Where do the women play this week?"
Where were they?
It was the point.
He's just like,
yeah,
it doesn't matter. Yeah.
Well, it turns out like that Masters finish was huge. It made him like a national icon, and it really grew the popularity of men's golf in South Korea.
Interesting.
So this is a little bit later about his upbringing. Today, Choi is simply an older version of the patient, reserved boy he was growing up on a remote Wando Island, an agricultural and fishing community, a six-hour drive south of Seoul. His parents were rice farmers, and KJ was the oldest of three kids. An avid athlete, Choi played soccer and baseball before turning to powerlifting as a 13-year-old, which he was quite strong.
Right.
Despite his stocky build, his long arms impeded his progress, leading his coach to suggest that he try golf, so his arms were too long to be a power builder. So at 16, Choi picked up a golf club for the first time, learning the game on the island's only golf, in air quotes, facility. A makeshift range that was nothing more than a field bounded by fishermen's nets. So maybe, you know, this is a solution to the tour's distance problem with ranges. It's just some fishermen's nets.
Sure.
It might be cheaper, you know, add those on.
Yeah.
So to actually play, Choi had to endure a four-hour commute, and beginning at 3 a.m. to the closest course on the mainland in Kwaiji. Sorry about that. He would play until nightfall. He once played 72 holes in a single day and returned home at 11 p.m. He made the trip every day he could. He said, "I love to play, and I knew it was the only way to improve." The hardships paid off when he earned a scholarship to a high school near Seoul, where he lived and played on the golf team until his graduation at 18. So
four hours of commuting?
Yeah, 4 hours of commuting. So he turns 18. He's like this rising golf star, but of course we know military service. So he does. Right, he goes to the military service, and he does his 3 years. Choi's really outspoken about this policy and how it stunts the maturation of generation of South Korean sportsmen. He says those years are when you develop as a golfer. Plus, in the military, you play you work too hard to play your sport. I miss golf very much. Sometimes I would swing my rifle like a club, and they thought I was crazy. So. He eventually, after a couple years in the military, like some officers found out he was really good, and they, you know, got him teaching them how to play golf. So he got a little bit back into the game. After the military service, he worked as an assistant pro, and his members picked up his greens fees and tournament expenses as he started to play Korean events, and then he eventually moved on to Japan events. So, obviously, first Korean, he earned his card in 1999, and he qualified through the old Q school. So he finished T32, and that year it was top 35. So a few others in his class. You ready for these?
Yeah.
The BB gun, Bart Bryant.
Brad or Bart?
Bart.
Okay. The BB gun.
John, PGA Tour Live star John Rollins. I shovel my own snow, Gary Nicklaus. The greatest SEC golfer of all time, Brian Gay.
Brian Gay. Oh, yeah.
Bob May.
The collection. Oh, fascinating.
Those are a few of the names. A few others, but.
Speaking of PGA. Right. Good class. Strong class.
So this is more from...
At least on the nickname.
More from the Elliott article. His game was well-suited to the task. A solid ball striker. He hits it incredibly straight and doesn't hold back. His caddy, Andy Progder, says Choi goes at the pin on every shot. Every shot. Not one for the data voice. I've never seen someone do that before. Choi's steely demeanor and aggressive play suggests icy veins, but he fights his nerves from time to time. Says Progner, if a playing partner has hit a nice shot, KJ will make a face and say, "Nervous now." Then he'll hit it even better.
What?
So his playing partners hit a good shot. He got nervous. Now Choi's moving on to the next stage of his plan. So this was written in after the Masters close call in 2004. His next stage of his plan, becoming an elite player. The first step has been reining in his schedule and changing his off-course regimen. Until last year, he played an average of almost 40 tournaments a year worldwide.
Ridiculous.
His trainer, David Derbyshire, felt joy was wearing out. No kidding. So the two worked to increase Choi's flexibility and strength. He also lowered his daily intake of high-carb Korean favorites, losing 15 pounds. So he lost 15 pounds. He was down to 190. This year, he'll play 32 times. After all, he's no kid anymore, says Yim. So Choi did become a pretty elite player. I mean, he got into the top 10 of the world. He ended up winning 6 more times, 8 times in total on the PGA Tour, won players in there, and really became the face of Korean golf, of men's Korean golf. He had 6 top 10s in majors over the course of his career. I figured this is, we had to go through this. He did a little like my 2 cents thing for Sports Illustrated, yep, that were just like opinions on politics. He said, "I'm happy that my country, South Korea, has a good relationship with the U.S." On Augusta National, he said, "Difficult." Korean food, he said, "I've eaten every meal this week at the Golden Garden. Great steamed chicken and pork." That was his Augusta hangout, the Golden Garden. He would eat, he'd bring his whole family there. Like, he moved his whole family in, and then he would be found at the Golden Garden all Masters week. His favorite American food was turkey. Favorite movies, Terminator 3 and First Blood, any action movie, really. Weightlifting. When I was 16, I squatted 150 kilos, which is 331 pounds.
15?
Yeah.
Good Lord.
He loves baseball. He lived in Texas at this time, but his team was the Red Sox. And orange is his favorite color. He said, "I have an orange shaft on my driver. I use orange tees, and I just ordered orange shoes with orange stripes."
Ricky. Precursor to Ricky.
Ricky before Ricky. Hey, did we miss the... Cleveland's on the clock next.
No.
2 picks.
We got one more. I think the Steelers are up. I was just watching. Your Wi-Fi was cutting out. But I was trying.
I can't even see you right now because your Wi-Fi's so bad.
I can't see you. No. I can't see you. Interesting. All right. We have anything else?
Nothing else. Hey, we got 20% off in the pro shop because the end of sumo season.
Little 75-minute episode on Valspar Friday. We do have 20% off on the pro shop. You know, it was kind of to cope and kind of steel ourselves for the mistakes that the Bears might make in the end of sumo citrus season. But now it's to celebrate the Big Bears night.
I'm about to just binge on some Justin Fields to the Bears articles. That's gonna be I'm gonna be up till the wee hours
like,
reading about this glorious
Luke Sasso watching Rory McIlroy videos. You're gonna be watching Justin Fields tape. That's great. 20% off in the pro shop. That's right. Everything. I got a shipment today of Dratty sport polo, regular polo, quarter zip, a mug on a mug. It was fantastic.
If enough people buy stuff, I will pack the unboxing video that you're trying to hide from society.
I should not have sent that to you. I did an unboxing video as a spoof, and my wife was just ripping on me the whole time. It was bad, of course. All right, thanks to Precision Pro, Ion Olympic, USGA, fun little Friday episode. Anything else?
I just clicked on an article by The Athletic, the Bears writer. Based on his collegiate experience and success, Fields is considerably different than former starter Mitch Trubisky, whom the Bears traded up to select with a number 2 pick in 2017.
Opposite of that. Guy who's excelled at like the toughest programs against the best competition. And was like a stud coming out of high school. I'm happy for you. Very exciting news. I can't believe that it just changed all at a moment. So that's what the draft does. All right.
You know,
everyone enjoy your weekend.
Maybe we were looking for the Georgia. Maybe Fields is. Because he initially attended Georgia. And then he transferred.
Yeah. I was wondering about that. I almost threw that out there, but I think like he transferred because they made the wrong decision. They put Jake Fromm as their starter.
He was all freshman team.
Yep. All right, everyone, enjoy your Fridays. Enjoy your weekends. We'll be back to recap a full weekend of golf and maybe more draft talk. Who knows? The Browns are about to pick here. But we'll talk to you guys on Monday.